listening to Human Rights 2020s, a podcast from the Human Rights Consortium Scotland. In this episode, Senior Policy Officer Lucy Miller chats to Kat Murphy, Executive Director at Engender, about CEDAW, the UN Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome everyone. I'm Lucy from the Consortium. I'm Senior Policy Officer here. And today's lunchtime webinar series is on CEDAW, and we're so happy to be joined by the excellent Executive Director of Engender, Kat Murphy. Kat's been a driving force behind promoting gender equality and human rights in Scotland, so we're in for a real treat with her insights. So, just to open us up, Kat, can you please tell us a bit about yourself and your role at Engender for those who may be unfamiliar?
Of course, thanks so much, Lucy, and thanks for organising today. I'll certainly do my best to share some thoughts and reflections on CEDAW, and I'm looking forward to the questions because I'm sure there's a lot of expertise on the line. So in answer to your question, so I, as you say, I'm Kat Murphy. I'm the Executive Director of Engender. I've been in the role now for just coming up on 2 years. And for those who don't know, Engender is a feminist civil society organisation. We're a Scottish charity and non-governmental organisation. We work primarily to dismantle structural sexism, to increase women's social, political and economic equality and enable women's rights in Scotland. So we believe in intersectional inclusive feminism. So our perspective is that we need to start with addressing the rights and needs of the most marginalised women. We recognise that all women are impacted by gender inequality, though it's often not a uniform experience. Women's experiences of that inequality and the extent to which they can mitigate its harms and the impact on their lives often intersects with other aspects of women's identities, their ethnicity, their race, their socioeconomic circumstances, their sexuality, etc., whether they're disabled, etc. So we want to recognise that from the outset. We work in Scotland, UK, and in some instances internationally, particularly as it relates to CEDAW, to produce research, analysis and recommendations for intersectional feminist policy, legislation and programmes. We are a membership organisation and our membership is made up of individuals and organisations working in the women's rights space in Scotland. In specifically in relation to international advocacy and CEDAW, etc., we are Scotland's representative on the UK Joint Committee on Women, and that's the UK's national coordination space for the European Women's Lobby. So we feed in at European level through that body. We have special consultative status at the UN as well. We have been responsible for the last few years for coordinating shadow reporting to the CEDAW committee back in 2018, and more recently to the Committee on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights in 2024. So our primary focus is Scotland. We mostly focus on Scottish government, but we do a bit of work at UN, European and international level too.
Thanks so much for that, Kat. And I guess before we get any further into the nitty-gritty, it would be an opportune time to explore a bit about the Scottish Human Rights Bill that we've all been working pretty hard on for the last few years. So for those of you that don't know, it is about putting fundamental rights into law, especially those from key treaties or standalone rights, as we sometimes refer to them, like CEDAW. The bill needs to grapple with tricky issues around devolution limits related to equality, and the Scottish Government are therefore currently proposing that the best way to deal with this is to only place a duty to take into account rights related to these three group treaties, such as CEDAW. The stronger duty to comply will only be on, we sometimes call it everyday rights, by CESCR, and the right to a healthy environment. Kat, can you tell me a bit about Engender's work with CEDAW and what the significance of it has been within your work?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, as I say, one of the primary ways that we as an organisation work with CEDAW is through its mechanisms. So we have coordinated shadow reporting. So what that's involved is that we work with women's rights and human rights organisations across Scotland, but also across the UK, whenever the UK is due to go before the CEDAW committee. And we produce research and evidence and recommendations, questions for the committee to ask the UK government and the Scottish government about the situation and circumstances of women in Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland and the whole across the UK. So that's been one of our primary ways that we use CEDAW. And then we get the committee's observations. So the issues that the committee raises with the UK and Scottish government, we then use for our lobbying. The other, we follow the committee's work in other areas. So the committee is regularly sharing observations, it's sharing general recommendations. So it's kind of written comments and articulations of what the convention means in practice. We use them to make arguments in the Scottish context. And we also as well monitor, you know, the committee, the CEDAW committee. At times undertakes inquiries and responds to complaints from individuals about the human rights situation of women in specific countries. So all of that learning that is generated and direction that is generated by the CEDAW committee, it's so invaluable, and we use it and utilize it, and we try and steer it to the extent that we can through the shadow reporting process, but also we use what we're seeing being reported in other countries and through general recommendations in our own work. So that's kind of broadly how we use the mechanisms. In terms of kind of the convention, what I would say is, you know, the convention on the elimination of all forms of discrimination against women, as I'm sure most people will know. You know, it's essentially a Bill of Rights for women. It has 30 articles across the convention that provide a kind of common legal framework that sets out women's claims for rights and equality, and it spans public and political life, marriage, family life, education, employment, and health. So it's very broad ranging. And maybe one of the things that's worth acknowledging is just how groundbreaking the CEDAW Convention was. It came along just slightly after the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. So the two kind of major kind of tenets of the human rights framework. The CEDAW Convention came along after that. And what it did was it really deepened our understanding of how gender inequality and discrimination on the basis of sex impacts the enjoyments of human rights. So all human rights treaties are bound by a principle of non-discrimination. However, CEDAW provides a much more in-depth analysis of how gender discrimination and inequality occurs and plays out, and the impacts it has on women's lives, the societal and cultural forces that underpin and replicate gender inequality, and the suite of specific positive actions that states can and must take to address gender inequality effectively. So CEDAW has introduced a much more holistic framework for human rights, particularly our understanding of discrimination. So it's something that is, you know, vital to as an organization to our understanding of gender inequality and the actions that must be taken to address it. It's a real international driver on that. It's also a space to share learning about what's been done in other countries. You know, it really helped move the dial in our understanding that human rights violations are not gender neutral. So factors such as inequality and access to resources and opportunities, entrenched gender stereotyping and sociocultural norms mean that women experience the world differently from men. And that human rights and the experience of human rights violations is a highly gendered one. And prior to the CEDAW Convention, that understanding wasn't necessarily there. Human rights were viewed in a much more kind of gender neutral view. But CEDAW sets out a really detailed, comprehensive, gendered understanding of how human rights violations occur, how they are underpinned, and what needs to be done to address them. So we use that all the time. You know, it really deeply informs what we do. Obviously, as I was saying, the CEDAW Convention has, you know, 30 articles. It's very broad ranging. It deals with substantive issues like health, political, women's role in political and public life, in family, a really wide range of substantive rights. But it also has a number of key, very important underpinning principles that again have moved our understanding of discrimination and inequality forward. The CEDAW Convention contains, it doesn't just contain negative obligations. So it doesn't just require states to refrain from violating the human rights of women and girls. It's not passive. It actually contains positive active obligations. So states are required to actively secure the effective enjoyment of rights for women and girls, and do so very deliberately and proactively. It also contains Article 4, contains it allows for temporary special measures, so positive actions that can help states level up equality between women and men and directly target areas of serious concern. And bring in potential special measures, so things like quotas or all women shortlists in the political sphere. The convention also deals with direct and indirect discrimination, and this was groundbreaking at the time of CEDAW's creation. So it's about intentional and unintentional discrimination. So it's not just actions and omissions of individuals that seek to deliberately oppress or harm women. It's also actions and omissions in law, in society structures and institutions that cause indirect or unintentional harm. So it's not just good enough for states not to intend to harm. If they do, that's very strongly recognised in the convention, and that was again kind of groundbreaking at the time. The other thing is that before CEDAW, international human rights law was focused primarily in the public sphere, and states' responsibilities were mainly articulated in that arena. So states were responsible for human rights violations that occurred in the public space. But CEDAW recognised that most, if many of the human rights violations that women experience, and most specifically violence against women, tend to occur in the private sphere and with perpetrators that are private actors. And CEDAW recognised that the state had duties to protect, respect, and fulfil women's rights in the private sphere, against private actors. And then finally, just kind of most significantly, CEDAW and international human rights law more broadly is based on a different conception of inequality or equality than maybe the conception that we use in law in the UK and to a certain degree within the EU that is used. So within CEDAW and international human rights law, states are required to take steps to eliminate discrimination to achieve substantive equality, and that's equality of outcome, and it includes addressing structural injustices and inequalities, so inequalities that are baked into our societal structures and systems. This approach is known as kind of substantive equality. And that it includes ensuring that equality occurs in the legal sense, but also in the reality, in actual reality. So in women's lived in their lives, in their lived realities, they have an enjoyment and fulfillment of equality. And that goes beyond the formal equality provision, the more formal equality provision within the Equality Act. That conception of equality is more about equality of opportunity, not of outcome. It's more about treating individuals equally rather than looking at structural injustices. I mean, this is a very simplified kind of explanation of the differences, but I think it's very fair to say that CEDAW really moved us on in terms of our understanding of the systemic structural underpinnings of inequality rather than just kind of the treatment of individuals at that equality level. So in that sense, we look to CEDAW all the time because we are most interested in addressing that kind of structural systemic change, those drivers that underpin all of the kind of manifestations of gender inequality that we see around the world and in Scotland. The only way we can really change that, in our opinion, is through that structural systemic change. And unfortunately, whilst the Equality Act has lots of really strong, strong things, and we're, supporters of it, it's not as progressive on that substantive equality of outcome, as the CEDAW Convention is.
Thanks for that, Kat. That's really, really useful. Especially what you said around human rights being gendered as well. Like it's I think it's just something we all fail to consider a lot of the time. Picking up on your last point, could I ask you about any challenges or areas of improvement regarding the realisation of women's rights specifically in Scotland when we see the Scottish Human Rights Bill come in?
So, in terms of some of the areas, I mean, I think it'll be worth Lucy is talking a little bit about what, and you've mentioned it in terms of what some of the limitations will be around the incorporation of CEDAW. But I think we taking a really kind of like if we take a an optimistic and a positive viewpoint about what could be achieved. So one of the weaknesses with the CEDAW Convention at the moment is that it does hold a power and weight, but it's largely symbolic. So we can go to the CEDAW Committee and secure concluding observations on the UK, where the CEDAW Committee will critique the UK or the Scottish Government on certain things. That creates pressure on those governments to bring about changes. People can go to the CEDAW Committee and ask them to investigate, or can go take complaints to the committee. The committee can then investigate those complaints and produce reports and recommendations for states. That was one of the drivers in they did that on abortion in Northern Ireland in the last decade, and that was one of the key drivers in changing abortion law in Northern Ireland. So it can create symbolic or external pressure, but it's quite a it's not a legally binding pressure on states to fulfill the rights of individuals. So it, for example, it doesn't give an automatic right of enforcement before a court. So women in Scotland can't currently go, or in the UK can't currently take a case to court on the grounds that it violates their rights under CEDAW. For that to happen, we really do need incorporation of CEDAW at national and domestic level. So we need the Scot, you know, what the Scottish Government is trying to achieve through the Human Rights Bill, but also, we would like to see ultimately the UK government also incorporating CEDAW into UK law, which would have a much stronger footing. And if incorporating the convention into the law of the UK and Scots law would have a much stronger impact in terms of accountability for the realisation of the rights set out in CEDAW for women to be able to take cases to court to have the full force of that convention to protect them and to ensure the fulfilment of their rights. So incorporation is a really important thing. And I think that we can maybe talk a little bit about some of the limitations and some of the things that might be quite challenging. But if we're taking a positive viewpoint within the Human Rights Bill in Scotland, what we think could be done is that we think that it will initially really raise the profile of CEDAW and what CEDAW stands for, and the rights that it should be guaranteed under it. So it will increase public, judicial, governmental awareness, hopefully, of CEDAW, particularly through joint interpretation of CEDAW and the Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. So that we are profile raising exercise to a certain degree. We also think that through the duties, and one of the things that I'm is not quite clear to me yet, maybe others on the call might know specifically, is some of the language that's been used is that the government will be required to take account of CEDAW, whether that's a due regard duty or I'm not quite sure exactly what that will look like. But what we think that could really help with is gender mainstreaming in Scotland. At the moment, we have the public sector equality duty, which is quite weak in many ways. It's our primary way of ensuring that the public sector and public institutions and entities integrate gender into the design of their policies and their decision making. And we're glad that we have it, but it doesn't have the full thrust and substantive equality focus that we would like it to have. So one of the things that we think that could come from the Human Rights Bill is that we have an impetus to really improve and strengthen the mechanisms around the public sector equality duty and gender mainstreaming and what we can make public bodies do to integrate gender into their decision making, their design of policies, etc. And that hopefully we might have a higher degree of accountability around that, because at the moment the accountability mechanisms around that are quite weak. So I don't know, that's kind of, I don't know if that's really answered your question. I'm happy to go into more specific things, but that's the kind of big higher level things that we hope might come from the Human Rights Bill at the moment.
No, it definitely has, and I think even out with the Scottish Human Rights Bill, we need far more accountability within this country. And I think quite a lot of the people on this call will be members of civil society. So if I can just throw you an extra question, it would be quite good to know how you elaborate on the role of civil society in monitoring implementation of CEDAW when it comes in, and what role we can play.
So I think that raising it, again, going back to that point of raising awareness, so raising awareness about what CEDAW involves and what CEDAW requires, that conception of substantive equality. So it's all quite jargonistic, but actually improving people's understanding of the structural change that needs to happen. At the moment within Scotland, I don't think that there's, and it's not unique to Scotland, but across the board, I don't think that our public institutions have a sound enough understanding of what is required to make the changes on gender inequality. There's not a focus on outcomes. It's often just, bodies will do an equality impact assessment of their policies and their programs, and they won't be focused on actually what's the outcome on women's lives in the real world. What actually happens after we design these policies? What is happening, and what is the impact? And are they bringing about the changes they need to, or are they creating changes that we didn't foresee that are having a negative impact on women's lives? I think at times, equalities is just understood as kind of equality impact assessments, job done. And actually, what we really need is improved gender competence, better analysis and data, better accountability on the use of budgets and resources, And these are all things that civil society, I think, can play a role in helping. One is in educating the public, educating women and girls, helping women and girls have an understanding of what can be very technical at times in terms of the human rights framework, empowering women and girls through research, through advocacy and engagement, and helping women share their viewpoints and perspectives. That's hugely valuable, and that gives us an understanding of what the impact is out in the real world in terms of what policies are having, and then helping us build a movement for change. Because I think that one of the things around this is that we need political will, and unless we have a better understanding among the general public about the human rights, you know, people's human rights entitlements and what they should be enjoying in terms of realization of their human rights, we don't build the political will. I think one of the things that worries me in the current narrative in the UK and in Scotland is that human rights are sometimes talked about as something that is technical, it's for lawyers, it's also kind of like nice cherry on top stuff, and it's quite esoteric. It's not something that really is about the day-to-day grind of people's lives, the hardships that people are encountering. It's more kind of academic, think tanky type stuff, and that's not true. And I think that's something that civil society, we as civil society, really need to puncture, and we really need to empower communities, women and girls, to really challenge that, because at times that's a message and a narrative that the media is feeding them, and it's working to the detriment of communities.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Sorry, I know that was a bit of a curveball of a question, but so many quotable sound bites in there that we'll definitely be using. Do you have any concluding thoughts at all, Kat, on where we go forward from here?
I think one of the, it's maybe worth just very quickly touching on some of the things that maybe I think where incorporation of CEDAW could make a difference. So in terms of kind of like one of, you know, on equal representation of women in politics in Scotland, you know, only 35% of local councillors in Scotland are women, 46% of our MSPs are women, and we have in the last parliament seen greater diversity among the women that are represented, but it still ebbs and flows. We're not making progress to the extent we should and at the rate we should. And I think CEDAW offers a lot of learning and direction on how to improve the situation of women's representation in politics, but also more broadly in public life, these temporary special measures that it offers, etc. I think there's a lot we could do there. Article 5 of CEDAW also looks at culture and gendered stereotypes, and it gives the state an obligation to eliminate social, cultural, historical patterns leading to discrimination against women. I think there's a huge amount to learn from that and to utilise to improve Scotland's approach to gender inequality. So at the moment, one of the things that we're working on is primary prevention of violence against women. So looking at how our culture feeds into violence against women, how the design of our services doesn't take into account violence against women, that kind of structural, cultural obstruction that there is to gender inequality. So that's something that I think we can learn a lot from in terms of CEDAW. The other thing is on social security. I think much of the most harmful, you know, we're speaking off the back of a decade of austerity, COVID, cost of living crisis, Brexit, And we have seen a really worsening rhetoric towards social security over that period. A lot of harm has been done to women through reforms to the social security system in the UK. It's been described as heavily misogynistic. It's some of the most harmful public policy that we've seen in the last 20 years has been enacted against women through the social security system. And I think there's a lot that can be learned through CEDAW. Scotland, obviously, it doesn't have social security fully devolved, but it does have some powers. And I think it has went some way to try and improve the social security system that it does have within its control. And I think CEDAW offers a lot of learning in that space too. And then just finally, Article 12 on non-discrimination in health. We think that there's a lot to be learned around specifically on abortion and modernisation of abortion law in Scotland, modernisation of services. We still, unfortunately, exceptionalise abortion in Scotland. And whilst women do have access, the suite of laws that we use are highly outdated, some of which hark back to the 17th century. And I think that the CEDAW Convention and the findings of the committee, the recommendations of the committee over the last decade or so, offer a huge amount of learning on abortion for us to learn on how we can actually move forward and modernise abortion, destigmatise it, and provide better services to women. So that's just, I mean, there is such a wide variety of learning. The CEDAW committee also offers a lot of really insightful, specific learning on intersectionality and the specific situation of disabled women, for example, rural women, migrant women. And again, I think we can learn a huge amount from that. And having CEDAW to some degree incorporated into Scots law gives us a greater impetus to really apply that learning much more in our policy and lawmaking in Scotland than we do now.
So much, Kat. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Human Rights 2020s podcast. For more information about our work as Scotland's civil society network for the protection and promotion of human rights, please visit our website at www.hrcscotland.org or follow us on Twitter at @HRCScotland. Thank you.